in one sense, the awakening or realization of true nature for humans is nothing more than an actual understanding of what birth is. What is it that's triggered in your mind or in your experience when you hear the word birth? What comes up for most people when they hear the word birth is they associate that to physical birth. They associate it to the birth certificate says Paul Lynn was born 7:30 June 7, 1956, Paul Lynn was born. Is that when Paul Lynn was born? That's when someone's idea of Paul Lynn was put in place. And not only that, but it was recorded, it was documented, and it's in a file somewhere. You may have your birth certificate filed away somewhere among your many papers. Even it could be in your special paper file in a safe that's not can't be burned. You know how the most precious things sometimes go in the safe that no one else can get into, and that you can actually put a piece of dynamite beside it and it'll just blow it over into another place. It won't come apart. The documents will stay safe. Fort Knox. Right. Birth, the word birth actually refers to the arising of the idea of an I. The idea of an I that then proliferates into a my and further proliferates into a mine. Now notice this. The shirt or upper garment on the body now. Notice how the mind thinks of that as your shirt. And someone else's shirt isn't your shirt. It's their shirt. Why? Because it's on their body. So it's not my shirt. Because it's not on my body. It's on your body, so it must be your shirt. Now, notice this. A shirt lands on the ground. It's sitting there. It's not on a body. It has no name tag. Because sometimes back in the grade school years, the name tag is on the article of clothing. And if the clothing ends up over here, over there, it could be a sock. It's got Johnny's name on it. Look inside, and there's the name tag. This might have happened to you. So the shirt's out there. There's no name tag on the shirt. Whose shirt is the shirt on the floor with no name tag? It's lost. The shirt has been lost. And so what do we human beings do in some cases? We take the lost shirt and we put it in the lost and found for somebody to find. And if nobody finds the shirt after a while, it goes into the giveaway box or over to the Goodwill. And then for a very low price, sometimes bargain basement price, sometimes 25 cents or less, the nice shirt ends up on somebody else's body. And now it's their shirt. This is all make-believe. We make it up. We agree upon it. And in a conventional sense, it makes some sense. We live by it, and it serves us to a certain extent. But where does it not serve us? It doesn't serve us right back at the fundamental misunderstanding about what birth actually is. There is absolutely no problem whatsoever with physical birth. So if the mind has gotten a hold of the idea that nirvana means extinction, and I need to be extinct, that means I need to die, that means my physical body is the problem. That's delusion. I mentioned last week, some of you were here, the Thai Buddhist monk named Achan Buddhadasa. Remember the chicken monk that would sit with the chickens running around, and he'd tell Dharma stories about the chickens? Wrote the book The Danger of I. Thin little book, about a good 12 pages long. The Danger of I. He makes the point very clearly that in order to understand, in order to realize, that's what understanding is pointing to now, realization of true nature, what you really are, it needs to be comprehended what birth actually means. I was born on June 7th, 1956 at 7:30. Yes, I have the idea that I was born in that moment. Guess what? Every day, let's just take the day, every day, human beings are experiencing the arising and the passing of the idea of I. And in the lucid moments of ease, of spaciousness, of freedom, of no problem, no conflict, guess what? There's no I. And in the moments of conflict, of struggle, of strife, of tension, of stress, of trouble, the fundamental essence of that trouble, strife, suffering, is there's an I that's been born. Again, take another period of our day-night, night-day. The I's gone in deep sleep. Where's the I? Lately, in this sort of unfolding over here that was supposedly born June 7th, 1956, 7:30 in the morning, Needham, Massachusetts, and it's on the paper, it's documented. In this particular process unfolding, lately, I don't know, last few weeks, these dreams have been happening that are so much fun. They're so entertaining. They're so amusing, that the waking state has become very boring at times. Somebody doesn't even want to wake up. The somebody who's having the dream. The I who's having the dream. Ah, he likes the dream. He likes the dream more. It's more entertaining. It's more amusing. It's more fun. And for day after day, as some other I wakes up, because it's always a different I that arises. You think it's the same I that arises? No, it's a different I that arises every time. The I that wakes up with the alarm clock is like, sometimes it interrupts the dream. Smack dab in a nice part. This is where some people just click that old button on the old alarm clock and they roll over, and in some cases it's dramatic. They pull the pillow over the head. You ever see that? Or the blanket. I don't want to wake up. No, I don't want to wake up. I, whoever I am, like it where I am. Don't bug me. you're disturbing my sleep. You're disturbing my dream. And when the dream of the waking state, yeah, it's a dream, this is a dream right here. The dream of the waking state is pleasant enough, don't interrupt me. Don't interrupt my waking dream. So what is our true nature? What is our true nature? Our true nature is the same as the nature that this body-mind process is sitting within. Our true nature is the bark of that dog. Our true nature is the sound of that bird. Our true nature is the opening of the flower. Our true nature is the blue sky. Our true nature is the cloud. Our true nature is the nature the body-mind is sitting in. So then, what does Buddhadasa mean when he's referring to the danger of I? What he's referring to is that this I, me, mine, syndrome, and it is a syndrome. What's a syndrome in psychological terms? It's a repetitive cycle. A repetitive cycle that is unsatisfactory, that is troubling, that is problematic. It's a syndrome. The American financial market is in a syndrome. It's called a recession. It depends on whether you want to admit it or not. We're not sure yet. Let's break the record in terms of how often and quickly we can change the interest rates. And by the way, in order to be safe, when on a tightrope, don't make any sudden moves. That's the adage that's applied to watch out. Watch out. The financial markets are in trouble. Watch out. So along comes the idea. Yeah, it's an idea. Pay attention. Observe. Learn to not interfere with what you observe. Become mindful. Become present. And out of becoming mindful and becoming present, see if you can be here now. And the mind gets hold of this idea. And it seems to make sense if one has been spending time not being present, not being mindful, not being here now. Now I want to be here now. I want to be here now. So in the very name of becoming awake, see, because why be here now, be awake, be mindful, unless you're trying to become something different, better, present, awake, alive. And why not just go right up to the culmination? Realize your true nature. So this is the irony, this is the paradox. How is the I going to realize its true nature? Is the rock, flower, bird, kitty cat, dog barking, attempting to realize its true nature? Or is it just being its true nature? In an honest, sincere way, a reflective, conscious way. Human beings in all sorts of lifestyles and places on the earth realize the danger of I. They realize the danger of I because the I idea that slides in there and claims this or that, wants this or that, prefers this or that, likes this or that, doesn't like this or that. That is the fundamental cause of suffering. And when that I falls away, suffering falls away. Notice that. Notice the insidious, incessant, habitual, collective, pervasive trance of I. And notice what notices it. What notices it is actually emptiness. What notices the I, you could call it awareness. There's lots of ways to play with this, thank goodness, because certain angles of play aren't attractive to certain people. Like for some people, the idea of sitting still as a meditation technique without moving for as long as possible, so that if there's an I that's there, it will hopefully dissolve, or at least everything will open up energetically and you feel better for a while, is completely repulsive. And they wouldn't want to do it for more than about 10 minutes or less. The idea of purifying this so that it can realize itself as part of the nature that it sits in, not separate from, but completely interconnected with. That idea would be completely repulsive. And yet for others, very attractive. And on it goes. Until eventually it's realized that any technique is actually an attempt to control or manipulate something that's unfolding naturally and spontaneously. And that's an expression, or you could say one of the manifestations of the nature of things, or the true nature of things, or the Dharma, is that it's unfolding naturally and spontaneously. Now, how is some meditation technique that actually, in essence, is about controlling or manipulating, even if it's about controlling or manipulating all the way up to the point where it breaks down, and finally, the control and manipulation goes away. How is that? How is that I, how is that process going to realize that things are unfolding spontaneously and naturally? It's not. It's actually fundamentally obscuring that. So actually, in essence, the true nature of what we are is more available when we're sound asleep than when we're awake. In many cases. Just notice the I that arises in any moment that goes with the thought, that goes with the feeling, that goes with the sound, that goes with the sensation, that goes with the behavior, I just moved my body, that goes with the body. And just notice that's a thought. That's a pervasive belief, concept, or idea. And once that's clear, that the eye is arising and passing many times a day. And there's no need to prefer the absence of the eye over the eye. That'd be more craziness, wouldn't it? Prefer the eye over the absence of the eye. That's like preferring being in sound sleep over the waking state, being in the dream state over the waking state or the sleep state. And it happens. What's the point? If the nature of truth is unfolding itself spontaneously and naturally in and through all things, then what's the point of setting up a higher, lower, better, worse hierarchy? What's the point of setting up an idea of arriving at a better place? The point is simply, if you could even say this a point, would be for that point to collapse. So people sometimes dig into, well, why is there this suffering? And the simplest response could be simply for the realization of freedom. Simply for the realization of freedom, sufferings arising in the form of an I that clings to this or that as mine, as mine, as mine, as mine. Intellectually, we know, even the first time we've ever thought of it, it's not mine. I don't own it. It doesn't matter how many times my name is written on it. It doesn't matter how many times people have said, that's yours. And let's be very clear, a neglect of, a repression of, a intellectual, mental denial of the body, of the feeling, of the thought. No, no, it's not mine. The clamping down, what does that do to human beings? It makes them very, very contracted, uptight. I'm going to repress this because I'm going to realize who I really am. I'm going to repress the fear, the sadness, the sexuality. I'm going to repress my femininity. I'm going to repress my masculinity. I'm going to repress my confusion. I'm going to stop it in its tracks if I can, so I can be what I want to be. That will mentally, emotionally, behaviorally, and in the colon, constipate you. Big time. Try it for 15 minutes. Just try it. Stop your thought, stop your feeling. Might as well stop your breathing too. Just clamp it. Now there's an exception here. British journalist gets captured by fake policemen in Iraq. He's kept for 9 months. He's in isolation. They take a plastic bag and stick it in his mouth and tape his mouth shut. And then they bring the handcuffs tighter in the back so he can't touch it. So just imagine that. Now you've got to breathe here. It's right in here. And they got your arms and you're in the dark. And they leave you. You know what he did? When thoughts about his wife, his children, arose, he pushed them away. He pushed them away because if he didn't push them away, if he let them arise, he felt so overwhelmed. And you can't survive in a situation like that. If you're just completely overwhelmed, you somehow have to find your way through. And thus he repressed the thoughts and feelings. And as the newscaster interviewed him, and he told the story, because he's alive to tell the story, he expressed intense guilt about having repressed the thoughts and feelings about his loved ones. And as he let this be known to anyone listening, he broke into tears and held his hand towards the camera. Please turn the camera off. And then the scene broke, And they came back on, and he was talking again, and the emotion had passed. Severe circumstance. Most of us will never see that, hopefully, personally, or know personally anyone. But if you were watching that, as I was, perhaps you would have been moved as if you were that person experiencing that. That's part of our interconnectedness. So there was an intelligence, you might say, that operated there. But if we're moving through our day, and there's an interest, and there doesn't have to be this interest, there may not be, in realizing who and what you really are. What becomes clear is, this isn't about changing how you live. This is about the rediscovery of who or what it is that is living. Who or what it is that is living. And the word rediscovery is key. Because as that dawns, as that awakening of true nature dawns, it's immediately, deeply, profoundly, totally clear that it's not a discovery, it's a rediscovery. That all that's happened in the arising and the investment in the danger of I is a forgetting of your true nature, is a forgetting of the true meaning of birth. And confusing the physical birth, which is no problem. In fact, honestly, even though there may be days when you wish to be extinct, not in nirvana now, but extinct, there's a clinging to non-existence, honestly, more often, is there not a happiness in simply being alive? In simply being able to feel, taste, touch, smell, hear, think, breathe, relate, and then all the different ways that we construct apparent meaning with our personalities and our relationships and our jobs and our roles. And what about that unbelievable dance of procreating, if that's where you need to go? And on it goes. So really, in a way, to say, I was born, means the birth of the idea of I was born. And what we miss is that the extinction of suffering happens many times in a given day when the I falls away. At first it's very subtle. It seems as if maybe these are just words. But they're not pointing to something that's actually happening. And thus, mindfulness, attentiveness, makes sense. Because if there is an attentiveness to the subtlety of the truth of the way things really are, then there'll be the repetitive dance, the cyclical samsara, that's perpetual cyclical wandering. And there'll be the repeating threads of the expression of suffering in the form of grasping, aversion, and delusion. Meanwhile, intellectually, we appreciate, we talk about, we don't own anything, what's the point of clinging? If something's already happening, what's the point in resisting it? And then more subtle than those two is that all the different flavors of the cloud of delusion, not seeing clearly what's actually happening. And in a moment, clarity can emerge clear scene of what it is that clinging actually is, what it is that aversion actually is, what it is that delusion actually is. And in that clear scene, it's as if the light of the sun just went right through the cloud, and the cloud tends to dissipate. The idea that I, notice again, the birth of the I am seeing clearly. There it is, just the idea. Just see the idea of I am seeing clearly. And notice that that idea is floating in space. It's being seen by emptiness. It's really actually that simple. And what this fundamental radical simplicity allows is the release from the idea, a very powerful and seductive idea, that you must improve yourself, you must progress, you must become better, you must become worthy, you must become purified, you must become holy. What does that mean? Have less holes? More holes? Don't we have enough holes? It's the pores alone, they're all over the place. Holy. So these ideas, however they have come into our mind, are simply ideas. To whom? To the I idea. And the danger of I doesn't stop there, because we live in a society that parades, celebrates, proclaims, reinforces, lifts up, adores, puts on the pedestal the I. The idol of the I. And as I mentioned last week, it becomes the ideal. I will perfect myself. This is complete and utter ignorance. Because that I is simply an appearance, a fabrication, an idea. And this is so clear in the smiling face of a child who is free from self-consciousness and will simply look into your eyes for seconds, timeless seconds, in stillness and presence. We are that child. We are that unselfish being, unself-conscious being. Or we are the I, who thinks he or she is this and that, who wants this or that, who doesn't want this or that, who's busy using the methods of success and proclaiming, I will arrive at a better place. Complete and utter ignorance. And furthermore, can I ask you, before I stop, does any I who's attempting to realize true nature actually become happier along the way? The happiness that was present prior to the Buddha's teachings on planet Earth was a happiness of sensory absorption. This was the nirvana of pre-Buddha times. Concurrent with that, a nirvana arose, a nirvana meaning a kind of extinction, a kind of elimination, a kind of, very important term, coolness, calmness. And that was the nirvana of tranquility. That was the nirvana of concentration of the jhanas. People realized that the happiness of trying to repeat and keep one sensory pleasure after another, the food, the taste, the touch, the physical contact, the nice music, the pleasant environment, the clothing, however people go for it, was unsatisfactory. what's limited. Because there was an interest beyond what's limited. There was an interest in the infinite. There was an interest in that which is eternal. And so the tranquillities gave a taste of something more sublime. And it just takes 1 second, not even 1 second, 1 millisecond of realization of one-pointedness, the happiness of one-pointedness, to realize that happiness is more refined than the happiness of a sensory contact, touch, smell, taste. Now take it further, a tranquility where there is no more pleasant or unpleasant feeling. Most tranquillities are born out of a more pleasant feeling than the taste of chocolate, or your favorite food, or your favorite music, or your favorite tactile sensation. But then came the fundamental and radical realization that was buried in the archives of the unconscious, you could say, of those that preceded the Buddha. Because what was being born actually was never born, because it could never die, therefore it could never be born. And that's the eternal. And that nature, okay, that nature, that truth, that nirvana, that coolness, was the extinction of all separation, of all delusion, born from the simple, fundamental, core idea of an I that is distinct, and not just distinct, separate from everything else. And that's the radical, fundamental essence of the meaning of the word nirvana. So that was a bit terse, if I was to comment on parts of that talk. But yet, what is happening for you now? Questions, observations, responses? Yeah.
A lot of connecting. Since last retreat,